We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit
mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better
since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers
since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
This morning we'll be talking with the Murfreesboro Police Department. Captain Clayton Williams with us today, and also Steve Jarrell, and he is the deputy chief. And then also Zach Farrell with us today. And Zach, what do you do at the MPD?
I am a lieutenant over our traffic division.
I don't think we've had you on before, have we?
No, we have not.
So we'll just do the whole conversation with you only, just to kind of get you ready.
Trial by fire. Right? Yeah.
So what is happening this time of year within the MPD? What changes are happening around Christmas time? Or are you getting prepared, I guess, for the new year? What does happen this time of year?
There's a lot of activity going on. You know, we've got the Christmas parade and we've got the Christmas tree lighting. So we're making plans and preparing for that. Always looking forward to a new year to look back on the past year to see what things that we did right, what things went well, and what we need to improve on for next year.
Now, when you put together different statistics and stuff, do you do that year by year with the year ending in December, or is it like from June to June, or how do you go about doing all of that?
We do a yearly report, and that usually runs calendar year from January 1 up to December 31st. We'll compile the statistics for the year and put that out in a booklet form, which is available on our website, MPD's website, so you can always go there and take a look at what we did throughout the year.
I know this time of year we always hear stories about car break-ins or shoplifting cases because of Christmas coming up. I guess that's one way to go about shopping for some people. But are we seeing an increase in those things already?
Actually, it's I think the numbers are showing that it's pretty steady, or it's actually trending downward. You know, we do a lot of public safety announcements regarding, you know, lock your doors, keep your doors locked. A lot of the times car burglars are just crimes of opportunity. People leaving their doors unlocked, leaving weapons in the car. So if you have a weapon in your car, please don't leave it there. Take it inside and lock your doors, because like I said, a lot of it's just an opportunity for somebody to come by and open an unlocked door.
When somebody does leave like a handgun or something in a car, then that gun ends up being used in a crime because somebody broke in and stole it. Can the person who left it in the vehicle, can they face charges as well down the road?
I don't know of any statutes that...
I don't know about that far. I think the only one I'm aware of is if they did pass one where if you leave it in a car and there's a child or a minor in the car or somebody and they get hurt, I think there can be some charges there. But I don't know that they've extended it that far to where if it's stolen from said vehicle.
I guess in some states, they've got such strict gun laws, it makes it almost pointless to even have a gun. Tennessee is not one of those, though.
Definitely, we're probably one of the lesser restrictive. And there's a lot out there. We see it every day. Unfortunately, we take a lot of them in, and sometimes, like you mentioned, sometimes there are things that have been used in crimes, but a lot of times it's just either lost or somebody tossed it, and it's amazing how many of those things turn up.
Now, there was a group of maybe two or three guys who were going around breaking into cars in different neighborhoods, and I know at least one of them was armed with a gun while breaking into cars. Did they ever find out who those people were? Were they ever able to make an arrest?
I think those were the Felony Lane Gang. They come from out of state. They're pretty organized group. They pre-plan and they know exactly where they're going and what they're going to do and what their escape route is. A lot of times they will hit those neighborhoods that are on the outskirts of the outer part of the city to where they can get away quickly. But those are pretty organized groups that come in and do that.
I know Williamson County, they put out a big press release and everything. I think they were having some real problems in some of their neighborhoods there early in the morning hours. But when you say Felony Lane Gang, is that the actual name of the organization? I mean, is it a group that travels together?
They travel together from, and like I said, typically from out of state. Where the actual name came from, I don't know. But they actually, a lot of them come from out of town, out of state. And like I said, they're pretty well organized.
The different crimes that I remember hearing about, everything from trying to pass worthless checks, to breaking into cars, mm-hmm. to going to stores in groups and decking, you know, just almost looting.
Correct.
Are we still seeing a problem with that, where groups of people, even two or three, come into a store at once and one person is distracting the clerk while others are stealing?
I don't know that I've seen anything lately on that. Have you, Zach?
No, I have not. No.
And how much of that stuff ends up for sale on, like, Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist?
I'd say probably the majority of it does.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you able to find it there? I mean, are there some cases where it's sold locally? You know, after they steal it from a store, maybe here in town or maybe in Smyrna or Laverne, they post it immediately?
I don't know how quickly they do that, but we have found some stolen property on, like, Facebook Marketplace that our detectives have investigated and gone out and made arrests on.
I don't understand why somebody would, first of all, steal, you know, from a store and whatnot, but then go and post it online. It just seems kind of dumb to do right back to back.
Well, but, you know,
it's... You're not always dealing with the smartest folks. So what are some of the other problems that you are seeing an increase in that people should be aware of?
You want to talk about traffic, Zach?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're trying to address traffic pretty head on. I will say that our crash numbers totally, that for year to year, they've actually been trending downward overall. I believe in 2023, we had around 5,300 crashes in the city of Murfreesboro. And then 2024, I think we dropped down just a couple hundred. I think it was around 5,100. And then this year, so far, we're sitting at 4,500.
So what do you think the reasons are as to why those numbers are going down?
I would like to say that our enforcement efforts, as well as our education efforts, just to educate the public, and then also to enforce violations that we see regularly day to day.
I know at the state level, there were some new laws that were presented and some ideas about street racing and bills that were passed. Are we seeing problems like street racing here in Murfreesboro still? I mean, I remember a time where there were, at least you would see a whole lot more of that, but it seems like you don't see as much.
We still get a few complaints here and there on certain roadways. Usually it's our routine, regular roadways that we try and check. Fortress Boulevard is one of those roadways, typically late at night, that we're aware of that. And we've tried to address that by putting officers in those locations during those times.
Those who are arrested for things like that, are they usually teenagers, young adults? What age group?
Definitely younger age. So I would say teenagers to your young 20s.
And what kind of charges can come with that? I mean, if you're caught street racing, is it a reckless driving charge or what is it?
It'd be a drag racing charge, and I believe they recently changed that in the law to where it's a felony.
Oh, wow.
So they've made it more severe punishment. So, yeah.
So if you're caught doing that, I guess, multiple times, you could lose your license indefinitely.
Yes, I believe twice. If you're charged twice, you can lose your license, yes.
Those things, I guess, do happen. I mean, you see cases like that or familiar faces whenever you catch the person who is racing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure they do. Yes, absolutely.
What about car thefts? You know, there was a time where we heard a lot about more car thefts, or people who would leave their car warming up in the morning. And of course, this is that time of year where I guess a lot of people do that. Are cars being stolen that way?
No, actually, that number is actually trending down for the year of car thefts, actual vehicle thefts. But you're right, it is that time of year where people are going to start their cars and leave them running. The only thing we ask is if you do that, that you have the key fobs that will do the automatic start. And that's kind of a safety mechanism where they can't steal the car unless the key fob's in the car. But if you have the old style like I do, where you have to have a key for the ignition, then we ask that you don't do that.
If you do start your car and all the doors are locked and it's warming up or whatever, is that a crime? I mean, or are you allowed to leave it running if the doors are locked?
I believe it is a crime if you leave a vehicle running unattended.
Because, yeah, you definitely see more of that in the wintertime than any other time, I'd say.
Yes, I'd say you're right.
On top of those things, more patrol around the area of the shopping centers, is that already in place for holiday shopping?
Yes, it is. Our traffic enforcement, we regularly pick locations that are based on, you know, high crash areas, but also, especially this time of year, we're going to pick roads that we're going to try and focus on specifically around this time of year. That would be, you know, like Old Fort Parkway and Medical Center Parkway, those roads that are like kind of like the arteries to the shopping centers.
I know over the past 6 to 12 months, we've seen several carjackings in Nashville. And it seems like they were a lot more violent than crime or carjackings I heard about in the past. Are we seeing any increases in things along those lines here in Murfreesboro?
I haven't heard of any carjackings.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
I mean,
we live in the safest place out there, isn't it?
Well, we're almost knocking on this wood right here.
We appreciate that.
I know there was one case here in Murfreesboro, and it was actually from a few years back, but the person who was convicted, they attempted to appeal the case several times, and I think they just lost their last appeal. When these things do happen, I know that particular case on the appeal, it was a situation where two men who lured, a father and a daughter to come meet them somewhere, and then they were going to steal the car was the whole plan. And they did. And they changed the plan at the last minute. Instead of meeting in a Dollar General parking lot, they said, let's meet on, I believe it was Gold Valley Drive or something. But those are things that people also need to be aware of. When selling stuff online, you don't know who you're meeting.
Exactly. And, the police department, we offer a safe trading place in the front of the police department parking lot. And we have cameras in the parking lot. So we encourage anybody that's going to make some type of transaction, they're welcome to use that area in front of our building.
It seems like one of the things to look out for would be people changing the location of where they intend to meet you at the last minute. And that's what happened in that case.
Yeah, that could be an indicator.
What types of things are you seeing where people are trying to maybe lure somebody into place to rob them, steal from them? Are you seeing any types of similarities, I guess, in these crimes?
I would say the most recent one that I'm aware of is somebody was trying to sell a handgun. And, of course, they met up. When the person handed them the gun to look at, they took off running. We did capture them, so they were prosecuted for that. But I'd say, especially handguns and things like that, you need to be very cautious about meeting someone that you don't know.
Are there a lot of gun thefts in Murfreesboro? Because I know I keep saying Nashville, but in Nashville, it seems like they put out a report every week about the number of guns that are stolen out of vehicles. They're just crazy.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised at the numbers that we have, even though they're small compared to what Metro is. It kind of blows my mind when we go into our staff meetings on Tuesdays and our data analyst is showing us the crime trends and what the numbers are showing, and you'd be surprised how many actually happen here too.
Yeah, and Scott, that in Nashville, it's interesting talking with other people, that especially areas that are tourists drawn, from Nashville being a big one. But I've got a good friend that works at Sevier County and Gatlinburg area. They said they spend so much time recovering after like a Monday or a Tuesday, getting calls where people go rent a cabin and they find firearms. They said it's like clockwork. It said it's ridiculous how many people leave those behind. So not just, I'm sure that happens in Nashville as well, but it's a. It just goes to show you how many guns are out there. But also, it's you never can say it enough about good gun safety and good gun security, because the likelihood of what can go wrong in those situations, it just increases.
I'm always surprised at how careless people are with their guns, with handguns, rifles, shotguns, all of them, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And these things, a lot of them aren't cheap. Some of the stuff some of the stuff comes in our doors, we're like, good night. Somebody spent a lot of money on that, so it's a. It's just kind of mind-blowing, I guess, if you will. It's the only really way I know to put it.
So when you do recover a gun that was reported as stolen, you recover it, then what's that process of getting that gun back? And do some people never claim the gun? I mean, do they never come back for it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Out of embarrassment? Or
Well, really don't know. Whether the firearms or any property that comes in as found property are there's certain guidelines that we have and the state has about trying to contact and notify the owner of that property to get it back to them. But oftentimes it's just either you don't have an owner information or, the information that you can find available isn't correct. But yeah, whenever we take a firearm in, if it's just found, unless it was, something where we knew why we were taking it, we knew who owned it, and it was safe for safekeeping or something like that. But a lot of those will, depending on the criteria, we have the NIBIN system, the Integrated Ballistics Network, that a lot of times if it's something we don't know who had it or where it's been, we'll want to see if it was something that has been used in a crime. And that's been a really positive tool that we've hadn't been able to partner with ATF and actually located a lot of firearms either used in our jurisdiction or other jurisdictions in crimes and helping them put that together with their case so maybe they can make a little bit more progress with it. But yes, ultimately, some of those wind up either they were used in a crime and can't be given back, or can't find the owner, and we'll dispose of those just in accordance with state law and regulations. There's some guidelines that you, things you can do with that and things you can't do with that. So we have a, I remember when we moved in our building, our property room was a large size facility, and we thought, oh man, this is great, we'll never fill this up. But it's crazy. We could use another one just like it. I don't know how many square feet it is, but of the stuff that just gets left behind from people.
And when a gun is recovered and it is determined to have been used in a crime, can that rightful owner, if it was stolen and then used in a crime, can they ever recover that gun?
It depends. You know, obviously that's going to raise some questions. Probably want to talk to them, you know, and learn some more history. But at some point, I mean, I know I know people that if they lose their, not lose, but their firearm safe stolen or taken, where, you know, we've had some success with that and getting those returned. And sometimes people, like you said, they may not have had any ill intent, but it got used that way. But once everything's done with that case, you know, and everything's finalized and finished, unless it has to, you know, wait for an appeal, say it's a very serious crime. But eventually, yes, they should be able to get that back.
But you're usually talking about if it was used in a crime. I mean, that could be 3-4 years down the road that, yes, they have the chance, mm-hmm, to get it back.
It could be even, yeah, like I said, depending on how serious the crime, and maybe even waiting out the appeal process. I mean, could be even longer than that. So,
are a lot of the guns stolen from homes, or is it typically, well, the case the gun was left in the car? I mean, what do you usually see more so than others?
I don't know the exact breakdown, but I think from what we see every week, I think cars far outweigh houses, but I don't know the split.
I don't understand that. I mean, if you're carrying your gun with you, why would you leave it in the car if you're carrying it to go armed for that purpose?
Well, and, you know, especially now, because there are some restrictions. You can't take your firearms in places. But those are small compared to the, yeah, places that you can.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it is just, I would venture to guess, people, they say they put the gun in there because they want it in the car with them, and they don't ever have any intention of carrying it on their person, and they just leave it in there and it just assume it's always there until one day they realize it's not. But I don't have any data to back that up, but that would just be a conjecture on my part.
And then you've got those road rage situations where somebody flashes a gun, pulls a gun out. Are those cases, whenever you do run across those, the person who is accused of flashing a gun or holding the gun out the window, are they usually legally armed, or does that usually turn out to be somebody who shouldn't have had a gun to begin with?
I'd say both.
I'd say you'd see a combination of both, yeah. But I guess it just depends on the circumstances, but your typical, I guess, I don't want to say just a typical road rage situation, because nothing's typical about
your,
a road
your
rage.
Your average road rage, right, situation.
Right. Is probably just a citizen, that a normal person that got aggravated, got angry, and made a bad choice.
Are tempers a little hotter today when compared to years past? Like when you first started at the police department, of course,
that was 30 years ago, man.
The population. Well, since then, the population has grown by 280,000. No.
Exactly. Yeah, probably so. Yeah.
But I mean, when you look back over the years and you see, of course, you see that population growth, but have you seen a big change in the attitude of the person getting arrested, or the attitude of the person who is accused of a crime?
I wouldn't say that I've seen an attitude change. I mean, I would say that our population, because it's growing so much, that we just see more of it, right? And I think that's just kind of how that cookie crumbles, you know?
And I would also say that even those type encounters where you're met with aggression or anger, I think they've always been around. I just think that it's like everything else. The bad always outshines and sticks in your head more than the good. I mean, most of the encounters, I'm sure, I know when I used to be active in traffic, I mean, 95-97% of the people that I ever stopped and even writing them a ticket, it was a cordial exchange, you know? And I'm sure most of that's the same way now, but you still are going to have some of that where, for whatever reason, whether they're mad at you or they're just angry, like Chief said, it's always going to happen. But our encounters here, I think, are largely positive, and I think it's people exercise a lot of patience, a lot of care, and you know, and they want to do a good job. So
I guess there's a certain percentage of the population that's just mad at the world. There's not a lot you can do about that.
Yeah, that's true. I've never arrested anybody that was happy about it. So.
Oh, you're here to arrest me. That sounds great. Can we grab a coffee on the way?
Sure.
Yeah, that doesn't usually happen, I guess.
I had him one time.
You've had one happy arrest? Man.
Funniest, it was before I came here. I worked at Sheriff's Office in Franklin County, and it got called to a wreck, and it was raining. I mean, like, just terrible rain. He'd crashed his car and he couldn't get in it because it was smashing. He's standing outside. Before I could put the car in park, my back door opened. He jumped in the car and said, "Take me to jail, I'm drunk." I said, "Okay." So we obliged.
Never seen another one like that, huh?
He just wanted to get out of the rain and get somewhere dry. I was like, wow. But yeah, it never has happened again. That was one time.
That's pretty unusual, I'd say.
It was pretty unusual.
Are drunk drivers the most disobedient type of arrest to make, or are there others that are a little more out there than that?
I would say when emotions are high, I would say domestics probably would outshine that as far as being a little confrontational, and that's my history. That's my understanding with it. And but definitely when you have intoxication and being involved in it, you do have the more of a chance of them being a little more upset easier, and, you know, having behaviors and actions that wouldn't align with what they would normally do when they're sober. So they would be a little more willing to kind of act out and to get upset faster and things like that. And that's a result of that intoxication. But I mean, my experience is, I think most of the time, I think that matches with what the officer's behavior and attitude are. I think they kind of ebb and flow, but domestics for me is definitely the one of the ones that would always, emotions are just so high at domestics that you just really have to be careful at those.
And then you have those, I guess, who are on drugs as opposed to alcohol. Have you seen a larger number of arrests being made for DUI when somebody is on drugs, not alcohol, but drugs?
Yeah, I would say we have, with pills and just illegal narcotics in general. I would say it's definitely edging up. I don't have specific numbers or anything like that to back that up, but that's what I would believe, is definitely the pills and the prescription medications and things like that is really on a trend upwards. Yes.
Can officers typically see a big difference? You know, they can tell right away, well, this isn't alcohol, that this is something else going on, as they walk up to the window or as they start listening to the person talk?
Yes. So you have the indicators, with alcohol being the smell. You know, typically that's one of the things you'll tell pretty quick, and you should pick that up. And especially with the officer's experience, and the more that they're on the job, they'll pick that up faster, the differences between those two. But you can definitely tell the difference between someone who's intoxicated based on alcohol, and then be like, okay, maybe this is something else that's happening here.
Then as far as the drugs, you always hear the TBI talking about fentanyl on the streets, fentanyl being sold and made to look like pills, and people, I guess those who are buying drugs on the street, they may think they're buying one thing, but they're actually buying fentanyl. But that being said, do you have cases where somebody takes a fentanyl pill and they're assuming it's something else, like a traditional pain pill of some sort?
I know that, not specifically that, but we're seeing a lot of different substances, whether it be methamphetamine, sometimes fentanyl, where people are pressing them into pills to make them look like a common. You know, they'll see, for example, I'll use a common term, Percocet. That's a common medication prescribed for pain. And a lot of times they'll press these pills, and they'll even get the markings on them to make them look like what it comes out of from the prescription bottle. And yes, unfortunately, sometimes people get those thinking they're taking a pain pill, and it's just going to maybe kind of have the same effect of just a low dose barbiturate, if you will, just to relax. And we've had, I know, some cases where actual overdose because there is fentanyl in there, and they thought they were taking that. And it's crazy the way that trade is kind of turned and gotten, even to where it crosses so many socioeconomic age. As to the why they do that, I think it's a readily easy, I'm just, like I said, I would have to talk to somebody more expert in the field, but it's just easier to carry around. It doesn't look as conspicuous in that pill form as it does if you had a bunch of powder in a bag. You know, that's not something typically people carry around with them, but it's easier for them to distribute that way in smaller doses. But yeah, it's sad, but I guess just like any other industry, that they're just doing whatever whatever they have to do to innovate to be able to increase those sales.
And there's more fentanyl on the streets right now than what, anything else? Is that the case?
Locally, I still feel like it's across the board. I mean, we're seeing...
we see it, but I don't know that it's more than anything else that we see.
Methamphetamine's making a strong comeback. I know not necessarily powder cocaine, but crack cocaine has started to come back on in other parts of the country. And then heroin got real big there for a little while. Haven't heard as much about it as much lately, but it just kind of, it's cyclical.
And with things like cocaine, at one point, you know, and maybe this is just how people perceive it in the movies, but it's like, well, those who are wealthy, those are the only ones who are using cocaine these days. And those who are poor, they're using, you know, XYZ. Is that the case with drugs like cocaine, or are they all close to the same price range, or what is that? What does it equal in the end?
You know, I think it's just everybody has a drug of choice, or sometimes it's just whatever's available at the time. An addict, I mean, for somebody who really has that problem, I mean, most of them will tell you, hey, I'll snort anything up my nose I can get my hands on if, you know, when I'm feeling like I need that. But as far as, you know, your folks, that what you would call functioning and just people in society, I don't know. I would say probably if I were going to put, I would probably put prescription medications probably one of the most abused amongst most folks that we come in contact with every day.
And I guess there's only so much functioning they can do on a long-term basis. I mean, at some point or another, people either quit or they turn to something harder.
Yeah, we could go into, it's sad. I mean, there's some recent cases, won't go into detail, somebody, kind of prominent person known in the public, the justice system, and see they go from being normal, hey, this guy's doing this XYZ, to hitting rock bottom because of an addiction. And it's sad, but it's usually a slow process. It's usually not that one that you see immediately jumps off at you, and that's why it happens. Then a lot of people are like, man, I don't understand that. He seemed fine to me, you know. So it's hard. It affects so many people, and especially this time of year. And so we always mindful of that, and it's tough for some folks that have lost people.
Is there a way to go after the main suppliers, or are they usually outside of this area?
We just had a recent, I don't know if you saw that story or not, where we investigated a death on fentanyl, and I think they made 30 something arrests just from back tracing that death of the person got it from this person who got it from this person who got it from this person. So it was a big conspiracy, and made a good arrest out of that.
Are you ever surprised to trace back the roots and find out, well, this person is somebody I would never suspect of being this big distributor of whatever the drugs may be?
I don't think anything surprises me anymore.
It like I said, it crosses so broad a spectrum of people that you wouldn't be shocked. I think when you see stuff come across, if it were the news, you know, in that case that Chief's talking about, that's the other thing, is sometimes we're such a live in the now society, we expect information. That was a 2-year process, so you know, and definitely still good justice for those victims, but in the limelight of everything of recent news, you know, a lot of times that's been forgotten about from the initial times those deaths were happening, because so much time has passed. But it's still, and that's why we're committed to stuff like that. And, you know, our investigation team did a good job of partnering up with other people to see this through instead of just not letting it wither on the vine, if you will.
We've got some dedicated detectives that when they sink their teeth into something like that, they're not going to let go. They do a great job doing those investigations. And like Clayton said, you know, we're dedicated to, you know, looking back and trying to get justice for the families.
And with cases like that, they don't just stop. You're going to go back and look at, all right, well, these people were tied in some way to this original case. Are there chances for you to go back and kind of re-interview, or chances to go back and arrest some of those people who you may have talked to along the way in order to make the arrest that you did?
Yeah, that's always possible. I mean, when you start peeling back an onion, you never know how far you're going to have to go down into it. But yeah, that's definitely something that, you know, that's a good possibility to happen.
And I guess you're also able to build up informants in a way throughout that process.
And a lot of times that happens. You know, when you start getting deep in investigations like that, it's possible to build informants and to get information that you wouldn't normally have been able to obtain.
Those who are informants, are they people who are usually, maybe they've already been charged with something, they're awaiting a court date that's nearing? Are they people who are literally trying to help out the best they can, just knowing that they're going to be arrested at some point or another, but they want at least that track record to look a little bit better on the way.
Yeah, I think you have a combination of both.
We're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back again this morning. We're talking to the Murfreesboro Police Department about different issues and things that are happening in this day and age.
This is a WGNS Action Line. Action Line.
At the Garden Patch Thrift Shop on Spring Street, we believe in more than just great deals. Every purchase you make helps Greenhouse Ministry serve over 70 families a day, offering hope and changing lives in our community. From name brand clothing to household items or even large appliances, you'll find everything you need at prices that will fit your budget. Plus, 100% of the proceeds go back to the ministry. Visit the Garden Patch Thrift Shop today across from the tall NHC building in downtown Murfreesboro, where shopping changes lives.
You know, gift cards are always the easiest gift. This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant. We will buy gift cards and just kind of have them on hand. They're amazing gifts to give to teachers. If you want to give a gift at your workout groups, you know, you have a personal trainer, family members. It's great to give gifts for 16, 17, 18 years old who are just now beginning to date, and they need to be able to have some place to take someone on a date to. Gift cards are always the easiest gift. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City. Come do business with our family while you're Christmas shopping. If you're looking to get Fluffy or Fido freshened up before guests arrive, we have a wonderful selection of spa quality dog shampoos and colognes. Do you have a particularly hard to shop for person on your Christmas list? A gift for their pet is always a welcome treat. Stop in at Animal City and let our 35 years of experience help you pick just the perfect thing. Animal City, 919 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
This message brought to you by the Central Tennessee Regional Solid Waste Planning Board. Visit RecycleRightTN.com for tips, ideas, and locations on where to recycle near you.
Don't be trashy, recycle classy, recycle right, Tennessee.
Recycling isn't just about tossing materials in a bin. It's about knowing which materials are accepted. Go to RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle Right Tennessee.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
This morning we have Zach Farrell and Steve Gerald. Names kind of rhyme there a little bit in there. That's good how you planned that. Clayton Williams with us as well from the Murfreesboro Police Department. What are some of the other crime trends that we are seeing right now? Well, here, let me give you a list.
I don't know. I mean, I just, trends wise, like I said, I want to be careful how I say this because I don't want to. It's just, this has been an interesting year seeing that things are trending downward across most areas. And we really haven't seen that probably since COVID 2020.
2020, I would say.
Yeah. And, but we're still tracking the same, you know, obviously overdose deaths, that's a very hot button issue. Car thefts, car burglaries, homicides, traffic fatalities. They're still, and all things are important. We keep up with that. But as far as, I don't know that I could really say that we've seen just something this year, but because things are going downward, I don't know that I can honestly say that we've seen a spike in anything.
There hasn't been, as far as I know. I'm knocking on some wood over here.
And I guess when we look at that at the end of the year, maybe something, even though it's not high, we may look at that from last year and actually see, like, okay, there was an uptick, but it wasn't something significant enough to where it was like, oh, something's going on here. Mm-hmm. We need to check on this. So we'll definitely have to take a look at that at the end of the year.
Now that we're almost out of time, I'll look at some of the text messages.
Oh, okay.
I probably should have looked at these earlier, but one of the text messages was asking about social media and how big of a role does social media play in crime today? And I guess that you can take that in any direction, really. I mean, from
huge.
Yes,
absolutely. I think it's really big for traffic enforcement and us seeing and getting feedback from the community. And that's one of the avenues that we look at pretty regularly. And we dive into several different social media channels that we're looking at, and we're just trying to figure out, hey, what's the pulse of the community? What does the community feel like is a very, you know, something that we should be looking at a little more closely. And so we try and gear some of our enforcement toward that as well. So that happened with specifically with red light enforcement. That's one of the reasons we kind of picked up doing a lot of enforcement activity focused on red lights, is that came from social media. So we try and be in tune with the community, I think, across all lines there, to try and see what the community feels like is important as well. So we're trying to stay in touch is the best way of saying that.
As far as catching people who are on their phones while they're driving, do you ever see, you know, what they're actually, are they texting? Are they on social media on their phones when driving? What are they usually doing when you do catch somebody on their phone and driving?
I'd say my experience would be just watching the phone itself, whether it's a video or a TV show or social media, just scrolling through social media. I would say most of the time it's social media as the culprit there. Now we do get, you know, texting and then just people just holding their phone, because, you know, it is illegal just to hold your phone while you're driving. You don't even have to be texting on it anymore with the hands-free law. So we see that as well. People just holding the phone with GPS and just driving along.
I'm envisioning people watching videos while they're driving down the road, but I'm sure it happens all the time.
Yes, yes, sir.
We are already out of time this morning, but we've been talking about Murfreesboro Police and different things happening within Murfreesboro. We appreciate y'all joining us.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you.